Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
BTS2. All right, we are back. Binge Talking Season 2. My first guest is someone I wanted to have on Season 1. It didn't work out, but now I realize it worked out exactly the way it was supposed to. Jimmy Webb is one of my favorite people on the earth. He owns I Need More, which is a rock and roll clothing store on the Lower East Side on Orchard Street. He is friends with everyone cool you respect and love from the rock music scene, Slash, Duff, Nicki, Iggy, etc., etc., etc. So this was someone I had to meet, and we covered a lot of ground, including when he originally moved to New York City back in the mid-70s.
17 years old, clothes in a pillowcase, not a penny in my pocket, and knowing nobody. It was awesome.
Meeting Jimmy Webb is a 3D psychedelic rock and roll experience.
I would dance at Studio 54 and then run downtown to the Lower East Side.
I'm so excited for you to learn more about one of my favorite people in New York. Without further ado, Binge Talking Season 2, Episode 1 with Jimmy Webb.
From New York City, USA, welcome to the Fox 5 Podcast Network.
All right, we're here with Jimmy Webb. Jimmy, you're someone who I just feel like if you're in New York, you just sense that you're there. I sort of became aware of you on Instagram. I'd see your images probably like 3 or 4 years ago. And I'm like, I want to know more about this guy. So I dove into your whole thing. And the more I found, the more I became fascinated. I'm like, he's hanging out with Slash. He's hanging out with Duff McKagan. He's hanging out with Ewan McGregor. He's opening a new store. And that's how I first came to know you. I reached out to you. And then we've talked a little bit. And here we are. And it's a pleasure to be here, man.
Well, thank you.
So.
I'm glad social media is working. Because I held out on doing social media for a long, 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 long time. Mm-hmm. Slash talked me into doing it, actually. Yep. Mm-hmm. He was like, you got to do it. You know, you got, and I said, well, I didn't do it to make friends. Mm-hmm. I did it. Actually, to honor rock and roll. Uh-huh. And I remember asking him, I was like, well, can I make it a storybook about rock and roll? Because rock and roll is such an amazing, awesome storybook. And he goes, sure, you can do whatever you want. So to know it touched your heart and it made you attracted to me and what I believe in, that's awesome.
Right. I mean, I feel like you bring a lot of people into your world. It just seems like a lot of people have a lot of love for you. To me, you're sort of like the embodiment of the Lower East Side. Like, everything you love about old New York or whatever seems to be represented by you. So your story is, from what I can glean on your Instagram page, you moved here 1975 as an 18-year-old, not a dollar to your name.
Yep. 17 years old, clothes in a pillowcase, not a penny in my pocket, and knowing nobody, basically. Uh-huh. Yep. It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was absolutely awesome.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, and it's, you know, I was talking to Iggy about it like a while ago, and I wonder, I don't know if that can still exist. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you could do it the way I did it. I mean, all dreams can come true, and I believe you can do anything you want, but it's such a different world.
Right.
I don't know if you could do it that way anymore.
Yeah. Where did you move to in the city when you came here at 17 with no money?
You know, my first neighborhood was the Upper West Side. I lived right near Needle Park. No, I hadn't seen the movie Panic in Needle Park yet, but that was my life in the beginning.
So right
my God, it was a trashy, wonderful, amazing, filthy, real rock and roll city. I call New York City the Iggy Pop City because you fall down, you skin your knees, you get up and you walk. You just keep reaching for the stars, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what New York City is to me, you know? And I went everywhere. New York City is like magical. Like if you don't do from 207th and Broadway, which was one place I lived for a very short time, to Battery Park. Damn, I lived on Wall Street, all right? Well, Wall and Water Street. And if you don't do all of it, then you're shortchanging yourself, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I always gravitated to the Lower East Side, actually. Mm-hmm. I lived on 4th and D in the 70s.
Yeah.
And that was pretty magical and amazing.
Yeah,
with Lou Reed's tranny girlfriend, Rachel. Both of us sleeping on the floor.
No
way. Yeah, of my friend Joey and Annalise's house. I mean, she and Lou weren't together anymore, but she's a piece of history. I mean, he sings to her in Coney Island, baby. You! If you told me I'd be living with the woman that Lou Reed sings to at the end of Coney Island, baby, early in my youth, I would have told you you're nuts, you know? And that's the magic in New York City.
Absolutely.
It takes you everywhere.
And what were you doing then when you were here as a teenager? How are you surviving?
Well, my first job, I was just going back because I have such a big magical story. You know, and on my way here, I want you to know, before I came here, I knew I was going to meet up with you. I played the long version of Rocket Queen in your honor.
Nice.
You know?
Nice.
The really long version. Uh-huh. And the Live at the Roxy version. And the only reason I'm bringing that up because I think back, what did I first do? My very first job. I was like 16 or 17. I always thought I was 16. I think I figured out I'm 17 now. Mm-hmm. I worked in a gay bar as a bar back on the Upper West Side.
Yep.
This, you know, cute little, sweet, androgynous looking boy. I mean, I was a country boy. I mean, I grew up with a pet goat.
From where?
Okay? Wineskill, New York.
Okay.
One of those skills, you know, with creeks and ponds and making mud pies, and went to a one-room schoolhouse where they rang a bell. And I'm thinking, what were my influences back then? And I've come to realize two of my biggest influences were Felix the Cat with his magic bag of tricks and Bam Bam. Come on, all that leopard, that bleach blonde hair.
Yeah.
Bam, bam, bam. There's your first punk rocker right there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So the Flintstones, right, in a way, got you here to New York.
Yeah. Traveling back. Well, and a very poignant true story in my life. I was walking to the creek in the pond with my friend Sue and her older sister and her friend. And we had some Boone's Farm and Tango, and it was going to be one of my first drinking experiences, you know, in hillbilly land, you know. Mm-hmm. And we're walking through the field. If I start crying, it's tears from the heart. And Take a Walk on the Wild Side came on the transistor radio. Mm-hmm. We were carrying.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, and I was listening to the lyrics, and my friend Sue said, she said, listen to this. Do you know what it means? And, or something like that. She was like, listen to this. And I listened to every word, and my heart opened up, and my heart got bigger. And I knew I was going to take a walk on the wild side. And I knew I was going to go to the wild side. And I knew I had to be on the wild side. That was the crayon box I wanted to go to, wherever it was and live in.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, years later, I'm meeting those people.
Right.
I'm dancing with those people. I'm sleeping on the floor next to one of those people. How amazing is
that?
That's, you know?
I'm a small town kid, too. So that's what I really trip out about you, is that, like, Appetite for Destruction was that sort of thing for me. When that came out, I was in seventh grade. When he says, why don't you just F off in the middle, it's so easy. I'm like, I didn't even know you could do that. And it sort of changed the whole wiring of my brain. And then when I look forward, New York City is sort of where that all led, I only realize now, in hindsight. You know what I mean? It was all leading to take me here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, here I am. Like, I didn't know what a letter daddy was. I didn't know what a tranny was. I didn't know what any of that was. I didn't know what a Park Avenue lady was. I didn't know what a pimp was. I didn't know what a whore was. I didn't know what trade was. And then that all blended into my life at one point when I hit New York City.
Right.
You know what I mean? So when your heart's telling you to do something,
never
pussy out. Go fucking do it.
You
you
go
know,
do it.
Excuse my language in this politically correct world. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
do it, you know?
And it
can be a scaredy cat. Is that more appropriate?
No, that, I mean, it's so true. And I mean, it keeps paying off. And I can tell you're someone, so you're sober now too. You have that air of gratitude, right? That sort of brings people in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, dancing on the side of the stage to a 17-minute solo in Paris of Slash playing guitar to Rocket Queen, that's fucking rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling it all the way in the bones, all the way to your soul.
Yeah.
I mean, being junkie was part of my story.
Right.
It led me to being clean, so the whole thing's kind of okay.
Right.
But
so how long of a period in your life was that?
Was I a heroin addict and a drug addict? Oh, long couple decades.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. I mean, you referenced, so we met, the thing, our backstory too is we did coffee and you told me a bunch of stuff and I'm like, oh, I wish we were rolling on this. Every interaction with you is fascinating. A phone call, a voicemail, it's all like it should be recorded and archived at the National Congress of Records or whatever they do in Washington, D.C. because it's all amazing content. But you mentioned, you know, you did the whole junkie thing, and then eventually you had to go to Albany and sort of sober up. And I was like, how was that? And you were like, oh, it sucked. It was horrible.
Yeah, I mean, it was good because it cleaned me up. But to go back, is very humbling. Mm-hmm. It makes you want to do things correct. Mm-hmm. And then to go forward. Yeah, I could not be in that small town. You know what? It's like I always use this analogy. I don't want to live in the 8-color crayon box. I always thought that was fucking boring. Yep. The brown, the yellow, the orange, the blue, and the red. Give me that fucking box of 64. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And let's color the world, because it's the only way the picture's going to get bigger and more beautiful as you hear the color you are.
And we're sitting here down in the downstairs of I Need More, which is your store, and it's bright pink. So, I mean, you're certainly living that out, which people will see when we do the bit for TV, too, for sure. Now, how did you start? So it's the 70s. You know, you're doing everything you would expect to be doing in the 70s and 80s, you know, partying, carrying on, meeting people. When did you start, like, meeting these, you know, artists who were inspirations of yours? Was it just in the club scene and you first started?
Mostly after sobriety, as you might call it, after getting clean. Yeah. Well, that's when the real friendships develop.
Okay.
You know, that's when real sincerity and friendships develop. Always being a fan of those people. It was Arturo Vega from the Ramones. He's the one that told me when we became friends later in life, he was just like, Jimmy, you've lived the most amazing life because you've done everything. You know, I'm very Gia, like that old model. I would dance at Studio 54 and then run downtown to the Lower East Side. I lived on 4th and D, as I said, with Rachel and two mother and daughter, born-again Christian hookers.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing right there. On 4th and D in like 1977, where no white person went, it was amazing, you know?
Yeah. Do we, when you look back on that, do we over-romanticize it? I mean, were you scared to death half the time?
Never. Because, because the beauty and the poetry of that world. Mm-hmm. You know, I was out with my friend Anna Lee last night, my most long-lasting friendship. Then her mother's passed away, Joey, and that was the daughter. And, you know, we're all together now. Our lives are different. Oh my God, the Lower East Side was magical and beautiful. Yeah, it was like bombed out and, you know, but, you know, they're like the Puerto Ricans making rice on a barbecue. I never saw rice on a barbecue before. That was for hot dogs and beans, like feeding you, and the guys playing dominoes on the street and unmatching chairs and a little religious icon, candles everywhere. Actually, you see candles upstairs. Mm-hmm. I called it the altar when you come in, the register. I call it the big altar. Yeah. There's all of those great religious Lower East Side candles. I was over on Avenue C last night, 9 o'clock, buying some, you know, like Lazarus candles and Jesus candles and Virgin Mary and whatever to decorate the altar. So it was very poetic and beautiful. And they welcomed me in. Those people welcomed me in.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I got held up in the hallways a few times, being a dope fiend and climbing through the buildings. And this is pre-Sid and Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
This is really early,
you
know? And then came that era and the buckets of heroin coming down. So,
wait, what does that mean?
Well, you would go in and buy heroin and you would climb through the bombed out buildings and you would go through all these buildings that weren't, oh God, they were like falling apart, the sawdust falling, and you would climb up the crickety old stairs and the big holes. Or if the stairs had collapsed, you would wait at the bottom and you would drop $10 in a bucket and they'd pull the bucket up in a pulley and there'd be a long line of us, and then they'd pull the bucket back down and the heroin would be in the bucket.
Oh, gotcha.
And you would like leave with the heroin.
It was like a heroin dumbwaiter.
Yeah, exactly. Right. How inventive, right?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
And the whole language of the Lower East Side then was bohondo, bohondo, tato bien, and donuts were like 25 cents. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know, everyone had each other's back in a different kind of way. You know, people bring up New York now and New York then, and I find New York much more dangerous now than the danger then. And why do I find danger now? God, and this is just a real truth. Because everyone is at such unrest. Everyone is so angry at each other. Everyone so doesn't blend. We all kind of blended back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Do you think that's the phone and all being in our own little worlds on social media and everything like that? Or what would you attribute that to?
Yeah. That's a big piece of it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no community like there was back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, and we would all come together, all those people, the Leather Daddy, the Park Avenue Lady, the Wall Street Businessman, the tranny on the subway, the desecrated subway with all the amazing art on
right,
it.
Right.
You know, it's a little too cleaned up. No, I believe in cleaning it up.
Sure.
You know, when all the crackheads were everywhere, that was not a good look for New York City.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or the garbage strikes, a mile high. But even that, there was a poetry to that. There was a creativity to that.
Yeah. So, like bottle service is something.
Oh, that's so lame. Dude, it's so lame. It's like taking a picture of yourself. Right. I mean, a lot of my friends do take pictures of themselves, but, dude, yeah, I mean, I have to take pictures of moments all the time for Instagram of me with people, magical moments. Mm-hmm. I'll say, but, yeah, bottle service, it's like, whoa.
Right.
I was, you know, just did Studio 54 Radio, and we were talking about that. There was no bottle service back then.
Right.
It just was what it was.
Give me an amazing Studio 54 story. oh, we made him quiet. Uh-oh, it's supposed to be a good one.
it's so magical. That was one of the most magical, amazing places ever on this.
Like, what was your angle for getting by the door? What were you bringing there?
From day on one, dude, this is why it's so rock. From day one, waved right in Mark.
Yeah.
I always say Mark the doorman.
Mark Beneke.
Like a big piece of my heart and who I am. When I run into him or meeting him years later and saying thank you. He and I was dressed out of the garbage. I had some shitty ass pants someone gave me. I safety pinned those shits together.
Yeah.
I listened to Iggy's Nightclubbing before I went. I took some acid. I went out that door and I marched down that street with a feather boa, you know what I mean? And they're like, yo, come on in, boy.
Oh my god, that's incredible.
Great, same hair I have now, dude. Yeah. Some things are worth keeping forever.
Yeah.
Like this haircut.
That is unbelievable. So you marched in the Studio 54 on acid.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Oh my god.
In that amazing like hallway.
Yeah.
Like when you were waved on in, there was this entranceway. You would walk down this hallway and it was incredible and spectacular. You would walk through the doors. I'll tell you the most amazing story. And you would walk through the doors and the magic and the beauty coming off that dance floor and the energy. Truly it was the beautiful people. My first experience with the beautiful people.
Right.
I mean, the beautiful people are everywhere, even the hookers and pimps on 8th Avenue in the 70s. But it was a whole different thing. And then walking over to that dance floor for the very first time.
Yeah.
And the dance floor was like one step down. And I remember standing on the edge and thinking, wow. Do I take this step? And I took that step, and my life changed forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
Yeah, and I was this little punk rock boy just living this grand old life. You know, it was awesome.
And I mean, so you're on the dance floor. Are you seeing Bianca Jagger and everybody?
And it
like
was everybody
the whole crew.
As one.
Yeah,
it was everybody as one. I never saw that elitist thing. No, I never went downstairs. I never, but it was everybody on that dance floor at one. It was a magic, a beauty of unity.
Yeah. Is that gone now? Is that the thing that couldn't happen again, really?
Well, that's what I'm kind of saying. Everyone's, like, protesting everyone, and everyone's talking shit about each other, and everyone's, like, not a good look.
Yeah.
Or, you know what also? Everyone, even within the community, and I'm trying not to talk shit about anything or anybody either, it's like, everyone's so elitist.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, my God, everyone thinks they're better than everybody.
Right, right.
And I'm not into that, you know?
Yeah, and how much of that is just the generation you grew up in? How much of that is the, sort of the perspective of being sober and having sort of a more open world view maybe as a result of that?
Well, I think growing up and aging, you know, has made me see things from a different way. I think social media has been something that's really not so great in a lot of areas because it's taken away from interaction.
Right.
Like everyone texts. No one does what we're doing anymore.
Right.
How can you not talk?
Right.
You know, I teach my employees here, coming to I Need More or even at my previous job is a magical experience. It's all about communication because everyone should feel welcome. Everyone should feel love, regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or rock and religion. Mm. And I'm not saying that because of NA or AA. I'm saying that because that's rock and roll.
Yeah.
That's what New York's about.
Yeah.
As long as you're not an asshole.
Right.
Asshole's not welcome.
Right.
You know
what
I mean? Meaning, you know, like don't be an idiot. Don't be disrespectful. Don't be rude.
Yeah.
You know, even the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, that's so over.
Mm-hmm.
Or no future. It's like, huh? This is 2017. Why would you be screaming no future? Why wouldn't you say, we are the future. Let's do it right. Look at the magic I have around here. Look what I get to do every day. I get to create love. I get to make people happy. I get to be part of dreams coming true.
Right.
Look at Iggy Pop, probably my biggest guiding light ever. I gotta say Slash is running a close second now, dude, because they're my two boys.
Right.
And Duff too, but Iggy and Slash are the top of the list, you know? And I think it's Iggy though, really.
Right, so in the store, I Need More, that's an Iggy Pop
song, yeah, right? That he gave you permission
tattoo.
To.
Because you know everything gets legal when you get grown up.
Right.
It's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
You have to really follow some rules here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I learned. It's good to bend the rules and break the rules a little bit. But I notice if you find a way to follow the rules your way, because
yeah.
you can do it your way.
Yeah.
Life works a little better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as you're growing up, having a sort of like, a, yeah, we, he had to write my lawyer and say, he doesn't own the name, but it is his book, it is his song, and say, this is Jimmy's. Nobody can contest this mm-hmm. down the line. Like, Jimmy can have the name of this.
That's
you know?
Great.
And I wanted to do it out of respect because I knew he would allow it. He's my buddy.
Right, right.
But, and his wife told me, when you called and asked him that, they both knew it was going to be the name. And it's like, oh, shit. My lawyer was like, well, you should ask, you know? And I'm like, oh, yeah. And I called him up and I asked. And he was so happy.
So where did you meet Iggy Pop? How long have you known him?
Well, that's kind of like in my heart.
Yeah.
Since day one.
Right.
Since the first song.
Yeah.
Since getting dressed and listening to nightclubbing at 18 years old on acid, he spoke to my heart in a way no one's ever spoken to my heart ever in my life.
Yeah.
Even blowing away the... Take a walk on the wild
right,
side
right.
thing,
yeah.
you know, on a whole another level.
Totally.
It was so personal. And his lyrics and his language have been like a spiritual mentor to me forever.
Mm.
Forever. He took his music and his spirit and everything he represents went with me all the way to the gutter and all the way back.
Mm-hmm.
When I was laying in a mental institution many years later, hooked up to a kidney machine after a suicide attempt, after getting sober.
Yeah.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Now you read Iggy's stories, he has ones that very much match that.
Right, right. Yeah.
which makes us kindred spirits right there.
Sure, sure.
But what I really want to give him, and it took 6 months to teach me to bathe again and a full year to read and write. And I would hear Iggy lyrics in my head and hear his songs. Mm-hmm. So that made us friends right there. Now, when did we become friends? Friends? One day, he just called me up.
No kidding. Why? What was the premise for the call?
The premise at that time was to ask me a clothing question. You know, I was getting him clothes because all stylists come to me all the time.
Oh, gotcha,
and I was like, and they're like, oh, everyone knew I was the biggest Iggy fan in the world.
Yeah.
And I had run the shows and at every show I would go wild. And he's like, come on up here, motherfuckers. I would be the first one on stage stripping off my clothes. And people that took pictures, I would notice our body postures the same. I have certain images that's amazing. The big I Need More when I got sober, I tattooed I Need More on my back in huge letters. And so I don't know, through all of that, the stylist would come to me and I knew how to dress everyone from Slash to Iggy Pop to whatever. Like, you're doing Iggy, go see Jimmy, he'll know what to get. And even one time I lent him my clothes, and I don't lend my clothes to anybody. I will say this, though. I wanted them back. I wrote in the contract, I want these shits back. And I got them back. You know what I mean? And I charged. All right? I was like, the stylist, meaning Iggy, didn't pay. And Iggy always had my back after that, and he started noticing me, I guess. I mean, it's our friendship, so I don't like betraying friendships and telling the personal stories. But basically, one day, he just called me up, and a friendship blossomed that... Well, it's based on trust, it's based on respect, it's based on loyalty, and it's based on everything rock and roll is about.
Mm-hmm.
And it just blossomed. You know, after you start hanging out, you find out you like each other or you don't, and it is what it is. I just got a little video from him the other day, and it was just like, and he's like me, he's not too into technology.
Yeah.
I said another thing, and it was his wife's birthday, and I sent her some flowers, and he made a little video for me of her getting the flowers, you know, which is amazing. I mean, who gets homemade videos for Iggy Pop?
No one I know, except you. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, Jimmy. Which is very encouraging. You know?
Yeah, I think that's probably our time. That's great, and we're going to do a little bit here for TV as well that you can check out later. Jimmy Webb, amazing. Great talking to you. Appreciate it, sir.
Thank you.
It's been great getting to know you.
You know, I got to bring it up on camera. That thing you're holding looks like such a sex toy. It's the biggest microphone I've ever seen. And I said it earlier, and it's still giving me flashbacks to the 80s when I worked in a porno theater.
I'll never look at this mic the same way. This is binge talking. This, you know, we go big or we go home.
Don't hold that shit too close to your mouth.
I mean, I think there's like 14 different episodes we could do with Jimmy Webb alone. Isn't that incredible? What a great start to the season. We already have season 2, episode 2 in the can, too. My friend Jefferson Waffle, the lighting director for Humphreys McGee, actually was able to watch him at work up close this past weekend at the Beacon Theater when he was doing the Humphreys 20th anniversary shows. Incredible, brilliant guy, cool guy, so talented. So I'm excited for episode 2 with Jefferson. And, of course, Jimmy Webb, thank you. That was an amazing start to the season. You got to check him out at I Need More. If you haven't done so yet, he's on social media, Jimmy Webb NYC, et cetera, et cetera. Great guy. We'll talk to you next week. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. This episode was recorded, edited, and mixed by Matt Onimus. Our executive producers are me, Matt, and Ahmad Asghar. Our vice president of news is Byron Harmon, and our vice president and general manager is Lou Leone. Binge Talking is part of the Fox 5 Podcast Network. I'm Steve Lacy, and if you have any questions or comments, feel free to hit me up on Twitter, at Stephen Lacy with a V, or on Instagram, Steve Lacy, STEVELACY. In the meantime, stay tuned for our next episode.